Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 255. It's about the Wen Ho Lee case, and this is being recorded on October 22nd of the year 2000. This is one of a number of programs dealing with Campaign 2000. In For the Record program number 143 from the spring of 1999, when the Wen Ho Lee case first broke, I noted that the alleged leaking of nuclear secrets to the People's Republic of China, for which Wen Ho Lee was being investigated, in fact, took place during the Reagan years. And so investigating and excoriating the Clinton administration for alleged leakage of nuclear secrets that took place during the Bush administration or during the Reagan administration didn't make a whole lot of sense. In For the Record program number 143, I in turn accessed a section of Miscellaneous Archive Show number 35, done in the summer of 1986, in which I discussed alleged clandestine military contacts between the United States and the People's Republic of China, this arranged by then Vice President and former CIA Director George Bush, as part of a way of helping to destabilize the former Soviet Union. And I noted with some indications, this coming from a former Reagan White House inside staff, that George Bush was behind the sharing of nuclear information between the U.S. and the People's Republic of China, that in an anti-Soviet Cold War context, I noted that it is altogether possible that some of the connections that Wen Ho Lee is alleged to have formed were in fact done as a result of proactive initiatives by George Bush acting as part of the Reagan administration. A recent article that was penned by Robert Perry of IF Magazine and posted on the ConsortiumNews.com website and very generously researched for us by a listener adds substance to the hypothesis that I developed in For the Record program 143 and that I have dealt with in other broadcasts, namely that the Wen Ho Lee case may very well, this is not definite, but may very well have been a piece of political destabilization not only against the Clinton administration but against the Gore campaign. In that context, consider the following. This was researched for us by a member of a listening audience. This comes from the website of the consortium, that is consortiumnews.com, consortiumnews.com. This is by Robert Perry, the head of the consortium. He is the publisher, the main figure behind IF Magazine, and this comes from the consortiumnews.com's website posted on September 18th of the year 2000. This article is by Robert Perry. And what this deals with are not only indications that, yes, in fact, the Reagan administration had been deliberately sharing nuclear information with the People's Republic of China, as I hypothesized about in Miscellaneous Archive Show M35 from the summer of 1986, and in turn For the Record program 143 from the spring of 1999. But in fact, this alleged sharing of nuclear information, according to Robert Perry, appears to have been a quid pro quo in which the People's Republic of China is said here to have secured a shipment of SA-7 surface-to-air shoulder-fired heat-seeking missiles to be given to the Contra guerrillas in Nicaragua, this to use against Soviet attack helicopters, which were becoming increasingly effective from a military standpoint in that war. The alleged sharing of nuclear information in which Wen Ho Lee appears to have played a role, according to Perry, was part of a quid pro quo. Bear in mind that as we looked at in For the Record program number 246, Wen Ho Lee was apparently making some of those contacts in conjunction with the Central Intelligence Agency, which might very well shore up the working hypothesis that I presented in M35 and For the Record program 143. And again, research credit on this goes to a listener. This article reads, over the last few years, Republicans have trumpeted suspicions that Democratic fundraising abuses in 1996 somehow helped Communist China steal nuclear secrets, jeopardizing U.S. national security. Leading conservatives accused President Clinton and Vice President Gore of, quote, appeasement, unquote, and possibly treason. The extreme Republican rhetoric, which rose in the months after President Clinton survived impeachment over the Monica Lewinsky case in 1999, set the stage for the harsh 9-month imprisonment of Los Alamos nuclear physicist Wen Ho Lee, who was released on September 13th after a plea bargain and an extraordinary apology from a federal judge. Yet, ignored amid the dark suspicions about the Clinton-Gore administration and the embarrassing collapse of the Lee case was another startling set of facts pointing in a very different direction, to illegal U.S.-Chinese intelligence collaboration implicating the Reagan-Bush administration. Little-noticed evidence from the Iran-Contra files reveals that it was the Reagan-Bush administration that opened the door to sharing sensitive national security secrets with Communist China in the 1980s. Again, that's what I suggested in For the Record Program 143 and in turn in Miscellaneous Archive Show M35 from the summer of 1986. Continuing. This clandestine relationship evolved from China's agreement to supply sophisticated weapons to the Nicaraguan Contras beginning in 1984, a deal with the White House that entrusted China with one of the government's most sensitive intelligence secrets, the existence of Oliver North's Contra supply network. In the years after that secretly brokered deal, the Republican administration permitted trips in which U.S. nuclear scientists, including physicist Wenho Li, visited China in scientific exchange programs. Those visits corresponded with China's rapid development of sophisticated nuclear weapons, culminating in the apparent compromise of sensitive U.S. nuclear secrets by 1988. 7 years later, in 1995, a purported Chinese defector walked into the U.S. government offices in Taiwan and turned over a document. Dated 1988, the document contained detailed information about U.S.-designed nuclear warheads. The document showed that Chinese intelligence possessed the secrets of the W-88 miniaturized nuclear bomb by the last year of Ronald Reagan's presidency. China's first test of a light warhead similar to the W-88 was conducted in 1992, the last year of George H.W. Bush's presidency. In other words, the secrets of the W-88, the central concern about Chinese nuclear espionage, had been compromised before the Clinton-Gore administration began. Logic would dictate, then, that any serious investigation into how Chinese intelligence maneuvered into a position to glean U.S. nuclear secrets should focus on the Reagan-Bush years when the secrets were lost, not the Clinton-Gore years. Amen. Miscellaneous, For the Record 143, was a program in which I first voiced the significance of this contradiction. Next, Robert Perry discusses the Chinese SA-7 missile shipment in considerable length. Note that this shipment is well documented and that it caused considerable disarray in the political and national security establishments of Honduras and Guatemala, among other countries, because it was feared that this could result in a variety of security compromises. The next section of Robert Perry's article, China's Missile Shipment, and it is his hypothesis that the Wenho Li contacts and other U.S. nuclear contacts between the U.S. and other contacts between the U.S. and China about nuclear weapons were as part of a quid pro quo, as Robert Perry indicates. An examination of the Reagan-Bush time frame, and particularly the Iran-Contra files, reveals how Chinese military intelligence ingratiated itself with the U.S. government. In 1984, the Reagan-Bush administration was desperately seeking a source of anti-aircraft missiles that could be smuggled to the Nicaraguan Contras, a CIA-backed operation that was seeking to overthrow the leftist Sandinista government of Nicaragua. By late 1984, the U.S. Congress had prohibited additional U.S. military support for the Contras, who had developed an unsavory reputation for rampaging through Nicaraguan villages, raping, torturing, and murdering as they went. One Contra director acknowledged the practice of staging public executions of Nicaraguan government functionaries. Despite this congressional Contra aid ban, the White House was determined to secure surface-to-air missiles that the Contras could use to shoot down Soviet-made attack helicopters that had become an effective weapon in the Nicaraguan government's arsenal. Operatives working secretly with Oliver North, a Marine officer assigned to the National Security Council staff, settled on China as a source for SA-7 missiles. In testimony at his 1989 Iran-Contra trial, North called the securing of these weapons a very sensitive delivery, unquote. For the Chinese missile deal, North said he received help from the CIA in arranging false end-user certificates from the right-wing government of Guatemala. North testified that he, quote, had made arrangements with the Guatemalan government using the people CIA Director William Casey had given me, unquote. But China was opposed to the Guatemalan government, which was then engaged in a scorched-earth war against leftist guerrillas. Because the Guatemalan army had massacred tens of thousands of Indians, including the annihilation of entire villages considered sympathetic to the guerrillas, China was not willing to sell missiles to Guatemala. To resolve this problem, the White House brought the Chinese communists in on what was then one of the most sensitive secrets of the U.S. government. The missiles were not going to Guatemala, but rather into a clandestine pipeline arranged by the White House to funnel military supplies to the Contras in defiance of U.S. law. This was a secret so sensitive that not even the U.S. Congress could be informed. but it was to be shared with Communist China. In the fall of 1984, North enlisted Gaston J. Sigur, S-I-G-U-R, the NSC's expert on East Asia, to make the arrangements for a meeting with a Communist Chinese representative, according to Sigur's testimony at North's 1989 trial. Quote, "I arranged a luncheon and brought together Colonel North and this individual from the Chinese embassy," unquote, responsible for military affairs, Sigur testified. Again quoting, "At lunch, they sat and they discussed the situation in Central America," Sigur said. Colonel North raised the issue of the need for weaponry by the Contras and the possibility of a Chinese sale of weapons either to the Contras or, as I recall, I think it was more to countries in the region but cleared for the use of the Contras, unquote. North described the same meeting in his autobiography, Under Fire. To avoid coming under suspicion of being a Chinese spy, North said he first told the FBI that the meeting had been sanctioned by National Security Advisor Robert C. McFarlane. Then, North went ahead with the meeting to gain the help of Communist China. "Back in Washington, I met with a Chinese military officer assigned to their embassy to encourage their cooperation," North wrote, again quoting, "We enjoyed a fine lunch at the exclusive Cosmos Club in downtown Washington," unquote. North said the Chinese officials saw the deal, in which China supplied SA-7 missiles, as a way to, quote, "stick it to the Soviets," unquote, China's chief rival in the communist world. North said the Chinese communists also saw the collaboration as a way to develop, quote, "better relations with the United States," unquote. Possession of this knowledge, one of the Reagan administration's most politically dangerous secrets, put Beijing in a position to leverage U.S. policy in the future. With China's assistance on the missile deal secured, the shipment went forward, although with additional delays. Contra leader Adolfo Calero began calling the ship carrying the missiles, quote, "the slow boat from China," unquote. North noted that CIA officers in the field soon got wind of the weapons transfer, quote, "So many cables were coming in that CIA Director Casey ordered his stations to stop reporting on this shipment," unquote, North wrote. When the missiles finally reached Guatemala, the Guatemalan army was so nervous about them falling into the hands of leftist guerrillas that the army gave the missiles a military escort across the country. The shipment hit another snag when it reached Honduras. The Honduran government balked at distributing the missiles to the Contras in their Honduran base camps near the Nicaraguan border. Quote, when the missiles were delivered to Honduras, it was, as I remember, right on the heels of a vote in which the Congress had voted down again the president's request for Contra aid, and the Honduran government seized the shipment, North testified at his trial. I wrote a memo to the National Security Advisor, McFarlane, and asked him to have the president call the president of Honduras and ask him to release that supply of weapons because the resistance, the Contras, desperately needed it, North said. Reagan agreed, but his personal intervention prompted a subtle demand from Honduran President Roberto Suazo for a quid pro quo arrangement in which Honduras would receive increased U.S. aid in exchange. The diplomatic minuet dancing around this sensitive quid pro quo issue apparently drew in Vice President Bush during a visit to Honduras as Reagan's personal intermediary. Eventually, Honduran authorities agreed to deliver the Chinese missiles to the Contras. In the following months, the Reagan-Bush administration increased aid levels to Honduras. As Iran-Contra Special Prosecutor Lawrence Walsh later wrote in his book Firewall, quote, "Quid pro quo exchanges had been commonly discussed at policymaking levels and had been almost routinely carried out," unquote. Also in connection with third country Contra assistance, Reagan promised to back trade legislation sought by El Salvador, where North's resupply operation was based, and the president granted concessions to Guatemala and Panama, two other countries helping out the Contra cause, Walsh wrote. Bush's role in the quid pro quos remained one of the last unanswered questions of the Iran-Contra scandal. After his election defeat in 1992, Bush pardoned six Iran-Contra defendants, effectively shutting down Walsh's investigation. In early 1993, Bush also ducked Walsh's request for an interview that would have questioned Bush about his personal involvement in various parts of the scandal. One of the interview topics was to have been, quote, "Bush's knowledge of or involvement with Central American or other countries in exchange for their support of the Contras," unquote, according to Walsh's final report on the Iran-Contra affair. See Volume 1, page 480. One of those, quote, "other countries," unquote, could have been Communist China, where Bush had served the chief U.S. diplomatic served as the chief U.S. diplomatic representative in 1974 and 1975. With the quid pro quo questions blocked by Bush's mass Iran-Contra pardons and his refusal to be interviewed, no additional light was shed on what Communist China got out of the missile sale to the Contras, what China's better relations with the United States, unquote, as Oliver North put it, had won for the People's Republic. And again, in the second part of Robert Perry's article, he suggests that that was the sharing of nuclear information of which Wenho Li appears to have been part, and which was later used by the Republicans in order to tar not only the Clinton administration, but through the gambit of the Gore fundraising function at the Buddhist temple, the Gore campaign as well. The second part of Robert Perry's article reads as follows. In the years that followed, U.S. nuclear scientists held a number of meetings with their Chinese counterparts to discuss areas of mutual interest. While the Americans were under restrictions about what information could be shared, it has never been clarified exactly why these meetings were held in the first place, why the risk was taken that some U.S. scientists might willfully or accidentally divulge nuclear secrets. These scientific contacts in the 1980s sowed the seeds of the Wenho Li case. In 1995, after the Chinese agent delivered the so-called walk-in, unquote, document indicating that U.S. nuclear secrets had been compromised by 1988, investigators for the U.S. Energy Department began focusing on U.S. scientists who had traveled to China during the 1980s. The investigators developed a list of a dozen names, including a lead suspect, Wenho Li, a Taiwanese-born naturalized U.S. citizen. As the Washington Post reported, quote, Li was at the top of the list because he had traveled to China in 1986 and 1988, and because he and his wife Sylvia had taken an active role in greeting visiting Chinese scientists, unquote, who toured nuclear labs in the United States, that from the Washington Post of September 17th of the year 2000. By 1998, amid the impeachment drive to oust President Clinton, Republicans on Capitol Hill got wind of these investigations. The Republicans eagerly sought to link the espionage suspicions to allegations of improper Chinese donations to the 1996 Clinton-Gore re-election campaign. Democratic fundraiser Johnny Chung had been accused of funneling a $30,000 donation from a Chinese military intelligence front to the campaign. By early 1999, word was spreading about a Los Alamos espionage suspect with an Asian name. In March of 1999, Chinagate, unquote, exploded as a scandal with front-page stories by Jeff Gerth and James Risen of the New York Times about possible Chinese espionage at the Los Alamos nuclear lab. Soon, Wenho Li was identified as the chief suspect and was fired for transferring sensitive classified material to his personal office computer. On May 25, 1999, a select House committee headed by a select House committee headed by Representative Christopher Cox, Republican of California, released an 872-page report in three glossy bound volumes. The report described how the Chinese government supposedly stole nuclear secrets while the Clinton administration dragged its feet on investigating. The Cox report did what it could to implicate the Democrats and absolve the Republicans. A chronological chart about the alleged espionage covered two pages, 74 and 75, and packed all the boxes describing evidence of espionage into the years of the Carter and Clinton administrations. Nothing sinister appeared in the 12-year swath of the Reagan-Bush years, other than a 1988 test of a neutron bomb built from secrets that the report said were believed stolen in the late 1970s, unquote, the Carter years. Only a careful reading of the text inside the boxes revealed that the principal security breaches under review, particularly the stolen secrets of the W-88 miniaturized nuclear bomb, occurred, quote, sometime between 1984 and 1992, unquote, the Reagan-Bush years. The first test of a lighter warhead occurred in 1992, the last year of the Bush administration. The illogic of blaming secrets apparently lost during a Republican administration in the 1980s on Democratic fundraising in 1996 didn't stop the stampede of media pundits who latched on to the Republican allegations. In the spring of 1999, Chinagate, unquote, filled a void in Clinton scandals left by Clinton's impeachment acquittal in the Senate. Dan Quayle, the former vice president, who then was testing the waters for a presidential run, accused the Clinton-Gore administration of, quote, appeasement, unquote, of China in, again quoting, espionage involving our most critical secrets, unquote. That from the New York Times of September 16th of the year 2000. other conservatives saw a new opening for fundraising. Larry Klayman's Judicial Watch sent out a solicitation letter seeking $5.2 million for a special Chinagate task force, unquote, that would, quote, hold Bill Clinton, Al Gore, and the Democratic Party leadership fully accountable for election fraud, bribery, and possibly treason. Chinagate involves actions by President Clinton and Vice President Gore which have put all Americans at risk from China's nuclear arsenal, unquote. Eventually, more temperate assessments emerged. A panel of intelligence officials reviewed the evidence and came away with far less certainty about the significance of Chinese espionage than the Cox Committee believed. The Chinese advances, quote, have been made on the basis of classified and unclassified information derived from espionage contact with U.S. and other countries' scientists, conferences, and publications, unauthorized media disclosures, declassified U.S. weapons information, and Chinese indigenous development, unquote, the panel reported. The intelligence experts could not decide which sources had been most important or what the Chinese had gained from the various strategies. In June of 1999, a study by the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, chaired by former Senator Warren Rudman, Republican of New Hampshire, concluded that the spying probably was less than, quote, widely publicized, unquote. Rudman's panel also found that the W-88 secrets were in the hands of other federal agencies by 1983, so the leak could have come from elsewhere than Los Alamos. The board also judged that suspicions had unfairly settled on Wenho Li because of his Chinese heritage. More about Judge Parker in a minute. Finally, on September 7, 1999, the New York Times, which had stoked the Chinagate scandal 6 months earlier, retreated from its overheated coverage. The new article by William J. Broad noted that the evidence was much more tenuous than the Cox report had represented. And skipping down. After 9 months of incarceration, a key FBI witness against Li acknowledged overstating some of the evidence and infuriated U.S. District Judge James A. Parker. At a court hearing on September 13th, Parker accepted Li's plea bargain to a single count of mishandling classified material and freed the scientist. The judge said he had been, quote, led astray, unquote, by the U.S. government and apologized to Li for the, quote, demeaning and unnecessarily punitive conditions, unquote, under which Li was held. Parker allowed Li to go free with no additional prison time. Still, federal prosecutors said they will compel Li to make a full explanation of why he downloaded the classified data. After the plea bargain, some of Li's associates offered a fairly innocuous explanation. They said Li felt he needed the data so he could continue to do unclassified work if he lost his job at Los Alamos, the Washington Post reported in its September 17th of the 2000 edition. Still, the larger suspicions of Chinagate remain a backdrop of the 2000 election with President Bush's son seeking to reclaim the White House for the Republicans. Though not alluding directly to the espionage allegations, Texas Governor George W. Bush's campaign has run ads showing Vice President Gore meeting with saffron-robed Buddhist monks in 1996, an allusion to the Chinese fundraising issue that sparked the Chinagate firestorm. Given the likely role of former President Bush in his son's administration, another question that begs answering is why the Reagan-Bush administrations allowed exchanges between Chinese and U.S. nuclear scientists in the 1980s and whether those arrangements were linked to China's secret support for the Contras. Was President Reagan's willingness to scratch the back of governments that lent a hand to the Contras a factor in the cozy, albeit secret, U.S.-China relationship? Was there a U.S.-China quid pro quo, as there apparently was for other countries? And if so, what did the quid pro quo entail? While those questions might never be answered, there can be no doubt that the Reagan-Bush administration did share at least one very sensitive secret with the communist Chinese, that the White House was defying U.S. law in 1984 by arranging military shipments to the Contras. That secret stayed hidden from the American people and from the U.S. Congress until the Iran-Contra scandal was finally exposed 2 years later. And I would note that Judge Parker specifically excoriated the executive branch, Bill Clinton, Janet Reno's Justice Department, and the Energy Department of Bill Richardson, a Latino American who was viewed as a possible vice presidential candidate to Al Gore and whose Energy Department has been significantly weakened as the price of petroleum has risen, and as another nuclear weapons-related scandal, the misplacing of hard drives at Los Alamos, has lent fuel to the successfully built fire to establish a nuclear security agency to oversee the security of nuclear weapons, and that in turn is being overseen by a former deputy director of Central Intelligence and Air Force General John Gordon. The Democrats had opposed the creation of that office. The Republicans had supported it. The Wenho-Lee case, in addition to discrediting Clinton and Gore, helped to pave the way for the establishment of that agency. The New York Times of Thursday, September 14th of the year 2000, spoke about the excoriation of the Clinton administration for the Wenho-Lee case and also pointed out that Judge Parker, who did the excoriating, was a Reagan appointee. And the question I'm asking is to what extent this entire gambit constitutes a destabilization effort against Clinton and also against Al Gore. Again, the New York Times of 9/14/2000 carries an article by James Sterngold headlined, "Nuclear Scientist Set Free After Plea in Secrets Case," subtitled, "Judge Attacks U.S. Conduct," subtitled, "Held for 9 months." It reads in part as follows. Stateline, Albuquerque, New Mexico, September 13th, skipping down. Dr. Lee, 60, was embraced in the courtroom by a throng of family members and supporters. But before the celebration, Judge James A. Parker of Federal District Court stunned a suddenly hushed courtroom by implicitly singling out Attorney General Janet Reno, Energy Secretary Bill Richardson, and senior officials in the Clinton White House for what he said was a questionable document, for misleading him about Dr. Lee's supposedly deceptive behavior, and then for ignoring his urgings that the government ease the, quote, demeaning, unnecessarily punitive conditions, unquote, under which Lee was being held. And skipping down again, Judge Parker, a Reagan appointee known for his measured manner and unusual patience, said he felt so deeply troubled by the government's consistent pattern of abusive actions that he expressed to Dr. Lee, a man who minutes before had admitted to a felony, his dismay that the government had unleashed the full force of its powers so arrogantly. I would also note that this act, to a certain extent, helped to discredit the Clinton administration in the eyes of Asian Americans, a very important electoral constituency in this country. In conjunction with Robert Perry's ruminations, I'm going to reread an article that I read into the record as part of For the Record Program 246. This is from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, August 11th of the year 2000. It's an article by Dan Stober, S-T-O-B-E-R, headlined, "Earlier Cooperation with CIA May Aid Lee's Defense Efforts," and it reads in part as follows. For many years, Wenho-Lee and his wife Sylvia quietly aided the CIA, the FBI, and the Department of Energy, sometimes supplying information about Chinese nuclear weapon scientists. Now, that cooperation may pay off for Lee, the former Los Alamos National Laboratory weapon scientist awaiting trial in Albuquerque on charges of mishandling classified computer files. U.S. District Court Judge James Parker has ruled that the intelligence agency's files contain information that runs contrary to the prosecutor's allegation that Lee acted with the intent to harm the United States or aid a foreign country when he downloaded the nuclear weapons files to portable data tapes. And skipping down again, defense attorney John Klein has argued, however, that Lee's mingling with the Chinese scientists was encouraged by the CIA, FBI, and Energy Department. As a result of Parker's ruling, Klein will be allowed to use classified documents from the intelligence agencies to substantiate his claims. And again, the alleged CIA connection of Lee and his wife when they were making these contacts with the Chinese in the 1980s is consistent with Robert Perry's ruminations. I've alluded to other tapes containing antecedent material or material antecedent to what I've presented in this broadcast. Those are available from Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T.com. There's a list of and description of the various tapes available on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That concludes For the Record program number 255 about the Wenho-Lee case, this being recorded on October 22nd of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.